Welcome back to TV Campfire Podcast. This is episode number 16, and I am Libya, your host. And this week we have three guests, one new guest and two returning guests.
Hi, I'm Allison. I'm a freelance artist from Los Angeles.
Hi, this is Ronnie calling in from Las Vegas.
And this is Peter returning, also from Los Angeles.
This week the news is a little light for me. Only thing I have right now is that Lifetime apparently has ordered three new police procedurals from some of the creators of stuff as CSI and Bones and a couple other shows. The only thing that I find interesting is that Jeffrey Bell, creator or one of the creators of V, is also coming up with police procedural. And since Jeffrey Bell is also from Buffy, I'm at least interested enough to maybe check it out, see if it's any good. Any other news?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, Peter Jackson is apparently taking over from Benicio del Toro to direct The Hobbit. Big surprise there, I'm sure, for everybody. That's exciting. I mean, he did such a fantastic job with the first three, so I'm looking forward to The Hobbit, too. And I understand Benicio del Toro is not wasting any time by... He showed up at the Saturn Awards to promote his possible next project, though he was a little dodgy on what that was going to be. So that's what I've got.
I'm just amazed that it took this long, or that Peter Jackson managed to restrain himself this long before he took over directing, because I know he wanted to so badly.
Well, he was being coy, I guess.
Well, I think part of the reason is that MGM is, as you guys, I don't know if we discussed this a few weeks ago, but MGM announced like last month that they were putting the new James Bond movie on in hold indefinitely because MGM is not doing well financially. Yeah.
Oh,
and so part of what happened with The Hobbit was it was supposed to be like a 3-year project of two films. Mm-hmm. And because they've had a lot of financial woes, they had to extend it, which is what pushed Del Toro out, because he already had projects with Universal. So the question with Peter Jackson was, could they afford him also as director?
Yeah.
And clearly you want Peter Jackson. So it sounds like, it sounds like they figured something out. And you're right. I think Peter Jackson wanted to do it. I think it's more a matter of the studio. And obviously it's going to cost a lot of money to make The Hobbit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, if you think about the returns, I mean...
Oh, yeah, yeah. But I mean, I think they're... I don't know, man. I mean, once they canceled James Bond, like, I was like, ooh, they're not doing well.
Yeah, you
know,
tells
that's one
you.
Of their big cash cows.
It tells you a lot about where they are financially.
That, because all the James Bond movies have been pretty successful. That's kind of strange.
Yeah, that's money in the bank, right. Basically. So.
But I'm very excited about The Hobbit. Although, still not really sure what the second film is. Do you know, Allison?
Well, I think that they're just planning on splitting The Hobbit into two parts, although why? I never found the story to be dense enough to do that. The only thing I could think of other than that is that they're going to do The Silmarillion as the second piece.
Well, that makes no sense.
No, it wouldn't, but, you know, I don't make these kinds of decisions. But that's the only other thing
like,
I can think
to
of.
To me, I think I read The Hobbit, and it feels like 1 3-hour movie.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Try to make it in two.
Yeah.
Well, there's called milking it. That's
well, but I'm, you know, I'm thinking they're not doing that, you know, like, so...
But. All right, you got a special report for us, Peter?
Yeah, so I went to the E3, and that's the big video game show here in Los Angeles, and it was kind of a interesting year. You know, the Xbox 360 came out in 2005, so normally this is the E3 where they don't focus on games, they focus on new consoles, so there should have been like... you know, the Xbox 720, or well, I don't know what the heck they're going to call it, but whatever the next system would be. But they didn't do that. You know, the economy has not been good for the last couple of years, so the belief was that Sony and Microsoft, what they were going to do instead was, instead of introducing a new system, they were going to be showing off their new wares. And most people probably know that, the Microsoft had a thing called Project Natal, which is now called Kinect with a K, and it's a... it's a no controller, all hand motion sensor bar, and the Sony has the Move, which looks very much like a better version of the Nintendo, the Wii controllers.
Which one did you like better?
I could see the application for both. I think when you are using your hands to navigate menus on the Xbox, it feels very Minority Report, which is pretty cool. And when you are doing like a sports game on the Sony, like a bow and arrow, like archery, when you pull back and you see it, you know, you can feel the controller kind of vibrate. You know, you get that feeling of like, you know, pulling the bow back. That, it was pretty cool. However, you know, my criticism of both systems, both of those things, is that, you know, the Wii did really well with casual games. And for me, the PS3 and the 360 are clearly doing this to get casual gamers. But I'm not really a big casual gamer. Now, as Libya knows, one of the games Microsoft showed off was a Star Wars game where you actually get to, you know, pretend like you have a lightsaber and everything. And that did look fun, except that you weren't controlling the movement of your character. You're only basically doing, like, you know, force push and pretending like you have a lightsaber. Mm. But then, to me, that feels it's not really quite total control. So, ironically, I actually think the most impressive thing wasn't those two. It was the new... Nintendo came out with a new Nintendo Portable DS called the 3DS, and it is 3D without glasses. And it was interesting because I was at the press event, and at the end of the event, they're like, well, we can't really show you the 3DS on a big screen because that doesn't really do it for you. So what they did was they had a whole bunch of booth babes or whatever come out. I mean, it was like 30 of them to the audience, and then you would have to like stay in line and you could see it for like 40 seconds or whatever. And I have to say, even though I'm not a big portable gamer, seeing something in 3D without glasses, you have to look directly at it though, was pretty impressive. Again, not quite sure what the applications will be, but that was an interesting piece of tech where I was like, wow, this actually looks 3D and I'm not using any glasses. So ironically, Nintendo, who I think is not hardware savvy compared to Microsoft and Sony, I actually thought they had the most interesting hardware of the show.
Well, I know that I'm actually more excited about the Xbox Kinect.
And also the Kinect, it does have the official price. It is $150.
Ah, okay.
So that they came out with that.
What about...
I know you and I talked about it before, but that's their official price. And I think the Sony controller is, I think, $100. Something like that. So, I mean, it's all around $100, $150. And, of course, the Nintendo has no price. The other thing I wanted to say about the E3 was, I mean, of course, there's also all the games. Nintendo had this game called Kirby's Epic Yarn, where you're this weird little pink dude who is basically made out of string. And it was really clever. Like, yes, it's, you know, not necessarily for Libya because it's a little overly cute. But I have to say... It was really clever design. I mean, you're basically in a world of like clothing and yarn and stuff, and it was really cool. It was a really like it just felt. I mean, I'm always more interested in that when I go to game shows. I'm interested in seeing people implement game design in ways that I find kind of fresh. I mean, yes, obviously Gears of War 3 looked really good, Killzone 3 looked good, all the heavy hitter games. Of course, they look fantastic, and I can't wait to play those, but I'm always kind of looking for games where I'm like, oh, what the heck is that? That's kind of weird. And so that was the stuff that like got me excited.
Okay. I heard you also went to some concerts. Any cool news or sightings?
The Activision show had like so many, it was almost like being at the MTV Awards or something, which I haven't been to, but I mean, like it felt like being at the MTV Awards because it was just so star packed. You know, it was like Eminem, Rihanna, Jane's Addiction. It's a pretty big show. Although the best cheesy moment for me was they did the concert where, you know, you've got the stage. It was at the Staples Center, which is where the Lakers play, anybody who's not in Los Angeles. And so they got the stage and they have this huge ramp that, you know, that the singers can kind of come up on the platform and get closer to the audience. And in the middle of the show, they just kept, you know, bringing different performers out. And the reason Activision was doing it was for DJ Hero 2 and their new Guitar Hero game. So, I mean, Activision has a huge bunch of music games. And for some reason, Tony Hawk was there for his game, but not really music. But so they're doing the concert with all these cool bands, and this music comes up, and I'm like, huh, it's like, this sounds like one of those songs from the 90s. I don't quite remember what it is. And it was Soundgarden. It was Black Hole Sun, which I think you guys all know. Right.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Know it from
the
Rock
guy
Band.
Who's the singer, Chris Cornell, came out from the audience onto the ramp, you know, Black Hole Sun, and man, like the women around me were all like, probably like 30s. Like, they weren't like 20s or a little older. They went crazy. I was just like, really? This guy? This is what you're going nuts for? Like, but they loved him. And I mean, I like the song, but it was just surprising. Like, obviously, Eminem, when he does they closed the show with the song from 8 Mile. Obviously, everyone loved that, and that was fantastic. But, like, the Chris Cornell guy, I was like, really? That's the guy that everyone's getting excited for? But, I mean, they were crazy for him, so that was pretty funny.
Well, I just, the only reason I mentioned it is because I talked to you the next day, and you had no voice. So I was like, obviously, yeah. You went a little crazy, too, so I just found that amusing.
Yeah, it's just not for that guy. But it was a fun show. And, I mean, there were a bunch of events that hold up, but I would say you're right. Star-wise, that was the biggest one, was that show. And it was really fun. The other thing was Microsoft did a Cirque du Soleil show to show off their Kinect. And it was okay. Like, it clearly cost a lot of money, but the best part of it was that as they walked you through into the arena, they would only send you in two at a time, and you would go through, mm-hmm. and you would find that you're going through what looks like a big television set. So it's like you're going through this huge rectangle, which is, you know, supposed to be like a TV, and in the room is a family. Like, I had, like, because it was like a multicultural, global, like, thing. So I had, like, an Indian family that my friend and I walked through, and then they greeted us. And, like, that was kind of cool because it felt kind of performance arty. I was like, you're in the game. Like, that was kind of neat. But then when you get to the actual show, which is mostly Cirque du Soleil, the only thing I personally really like about Cirque du Soleil is the acrobatics. I don't really think the goofy French humor thing works that much on me. Some people like that. I don't. So that was more what they did. So I was kind of disappointed that if you have Cirque du Soleil, I want to see cool, crazy acrobatics. And they didn't really do that. So I thought that was kind of weird to me. I'm not really sure why.
Yeah, that seems to defeat the purpose somehow.
Yeah, very big waste of their talent.
Yeah, just kind of a weird, okay. Yeah. It was more like they got them to be more like kind of Avatar-like, except that they weren't blue. You know, they had their own color scheme, but it was more that kind of like, natural green forest, and it's all about the environment. And I was like, yeah, this feels a little new agey. Like, you know, for me, I thought it was a little cheesy. So, but that clearly was very expensive. I mean, that and the Activision, I would say, were the two of shows where I was like, well, clearly these companies spent a lot of money, you know, to put those on.
All right. I was going to say, if that's it, because I was going to say thank you for your report.
Oh, yeah, thanks, sir.
All right. I appreciate you reporting back to us. I know that technically your job is to report to E, and we appreciate getting seconds.
No, I get to talk a lot more here. Get to blab on.
All right. So let's move on to the shows. The first show up is True Blood, and it was the second episode. And it was basically we find out what's going on with Bill. We find out what's going on with Sam, and... basically all the little clues they give you in the first episode start to come to a little, start to move forward.
Yeah, and they're introducing more of the new characters bit by bit.
So what did you...
The best part was hanging out with Lafayette.
always. That's a given, I think.
Yeah. The guy's awesome.
Oh, my favorite part of the show, really. I absolutely adore him. I'm so thrilled that they keep going with Lafayette because he makes the show for me. I look so forward to any scene that he's in.
What was the strongest plot, do you guys think?
Well, I'm curious. I mean, wait, before we go forward, because I don't know if you did this on the last week. So there are four of us here. Am I the only one who has not read the books? I have not.
I have not. I have read, like, little synopses so that I have a vague idea of what's going on. And I know people who are into it, so they've mentioned various things. But that's as far as it goes. I didn't want to so much read the books to be spoiled for things that are going to happen later on. And also I know that they're trying to go a little far afield from the books, not follow them to the letter, do their own thing.
They're cheating a little bit.
They are cheating.
And I'm the worst because I'm not watching the series or reading the books. And I have one coworker who's going to knock me over the head. So I've got to get caught up with both.
Yeah, you really should, at least the TV show, because it's just absolutely awesome. It's beautifully mounted, beautifully acted, and I think that they're just doing a fantastic job with it.
I will reiterate again, the books are better than the show.
All right. I haven't read the books, so.
But we wouldn't have Lafayette anymore.
That's true.
That
I mean,
you know,
eyes, right?
See, and yeah. we wouldn't have Jessica either because she's entirely a construct of the TV show.
Oh, I like Jessica.
She is a new character they created. She's great for comedy relief. And this week's episode was, I mean, I'm equally part frustrated with her and I laugh hysterically at her because the entire conflict for this week's episode, which is a continuation of last week's, which is she's got a freaking dead body in the house and she doesn't know what to do with it. And I'm just yelling at the screen, bury the body in the backyard. You know, I'm like, just bury it. And then when somebody comes by that can help you, then maybe you can figure out how to dispose it.
Worry about it then.
Right. But you don't leave it in the house to smell your house up.
Right. I agree. And, well, originally, to be fair, I think in the beginning, she was going to try to make him into a vampire.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's
she
why
gave
the
body him her blood
there in the first place.
Yeah. Well, originally she accidentally killed him, so that was
right.
that was the first mistake.
And
she
then
made.
Dragged him home,
right?
So, which makes it even better.
Oh,
but
my
I think
goodness.
Part of her charm is that she is so absolutely inept at being a vampire at
right.
this stage.
That's what makes it hilarious.
Because she is brand new, and Bill is not doing the most spectacular job of training her.
Not at all. He gets an F for being a teacher.
Oh, come on, he's a bad dad. And you know, so she's just kind of winging it on her own for a lot of this. And just, I think that they're doing a really great job. She comes off charming,
yeah.
whereas she could have been very annoying. And she, I think the kinds of things she's going through are like mistakes that you could believe at her stage.
Right, right. And I mean, I'm yelling at the screen, but I absolutely adore her at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So it, you're right, it works.
And her and Hoyt together.
Oh, Hoyt
just,
is so adorable.
That is magic.
Yeah, I like Hoyt too. I do hope that they can find a way to make it work. I like Hoyt.
Oh, yeah. Those two crazy kids.
Yes. Actually, I have to say, I don't know how much Olivia has talked about, Trouble in the last episode, but normally Olivia and I are kind of hard on Anna Paquin's performance as Suki, and yet she had the best, I think she had the best line in the episode was when she was like, I keep expecting Bill to come in here and go, Suki.
I don't think I could stop laughing
like,
for 5
funny.
Minutes.
Did you guys like that?
That was awesome. I fell over. I actually had to, because I DVR all of this, and I actually had to stop the thing because I was just laughing too hard. It was awesome. She did the perfect delivery of that.
I had no idea she had a Bill impersonation up her sleeve. And what's funny is he does... He's so serious.
Yes.
And she did a really good job of just conveying how I'm super serious now, Suki.
Suki.
That was pretty good. I laughed.
But yeah, that was her good highlight. I didn't like, was it this week? No, it was last week that Tara flipped out on her. This week, the good stuff with the Tara and Lafayette storyline is when they went to go see Lafayette's mom.
Yes.
Yeah, that's good.
Who was played
great,
by...
Great if scary turn by
Alfre
Woodard. Yes.
Oh, yeah. She was fantastic. And it's just like random stuff was coming out of her mouth. That was so bizarre. But I really... The moment when he's talking to her and tells her, you know, this kind of craziness is in our family. He's like, look at your mother. Look at my mother. And he's like, now you know I'm worried about you. And he's like, if you don't get yourself together, you're going to have a room right next door.
Yeah.
And oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good intervention right there. So,
I mean, if that won't scare you, nothing will. This is...
You know, I will say, though, the main focus, I think, of the episode, which was what the cliffhanger was last week, you know, I'm not sure how interested I am, which is it seems to be... It looks like the big bad of this season, is it werewolves? Is that what it's going to be?
I don't know. I don't know if they're going to be the big bad. I'm not sure because, I'm going to guess because this is slightly from the books, but it looks like the guy who has invited Bill over, well, when I say invite.
The king of Mississippi.
When I say invite, I mean held him hostage.
Yes.
Yeah, the king of Mississippi is trying to move in on Louisiana. And he wants to control that territory. I believe it's going to be a combination of him trying to take over the queen's territory, which is going to mean that people loyal to the queen are going to have to fight, though technically that happens in like book 6 or 7. And you have the magistrate coming, trying to enforce the law about who the heck is selling V.
I love the Magister. I'm so glad that they brought him back.
Yeah, I like that actor too.
Yeah,
I can
never pronounce his name.
Oh, he has a crazy name.
He does, but I have loved him in absolutely everything I've seen him in. And in fact, actually, another thing that he was in is going to be on next week, I think, preempting True Blood, the John Adams series. They're doing a marathon of that for July 4th. And he's that, and he's absolutely brilliant.
He's very good in that. I saw that, too.
But
I was like, why are they preempting True Blood? But you're like, oh, 4th of July weekend.
4th of July.
Okay, that makes sense. Because I was like, why would they preempt that or their own show?
I know. It's a desert. There's nothing on next weekend. So.
But we should also talk about the werewolves a little bit. One thing I like is that using the real wolves looks really cool. But one thing I don't like is so far, the only werewolves we've seen have been kind of stupid. You know, they're not selling us on the intelligence of werewolves, and I don't like that.
Well, I think that last season they kind of prepped you for that when they were talking about, they had the shapeshifters discussing, you know, have you ever met a werewolf or something like that? And I'm blanking on her name now, but the shapeshifter who was the Maenad's.
Oh, I mean, Sam, who's a shapeshifter, and then that woman, I know you're talking about.
Yeah, and I'm blanking on her name, but Daphne, that's it. And Daphne had nothing but contempt for werewolves. She didn't even want to discuss them. As far as she was concerned, they were less than the dirt on her shoe. And I think that they're kind of previewing, there's something about them that is just, or at least the society that they've formed, that is really kind of low life. They are the trailer trash of
but
the supernatural
see,
world.
That's the from of course I'm coming from the books. That's not true because there are, and that's why I'm waiting for Alisade, which I heard he's coming this season, and I'm like, thank God. And Alisade is actually he's like a lawyer. He's really smart. He's really intelligent.
Yeah,
and
I've seen pictures of who's going to be playing him, and he is very fine.
Oh, okay.
He is going to be worth waiting for.
All right, then. I mean, that's also good, but I can't, because that character is the biggest werewolf character in the books.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get to him and show that not all werewolves are just trailer trash idiots.
Right.
However, there's a storyline that they only gave like 5 seconds to in the story that I'm very excited about, which is, remember when the cops show up in that little town hotspot and they start to arrest all of them? That's actually a huge story point.
Is it?
Yes. Okay. And I was like, yes! Because I think the brother, Jason, was just sitting in the car watching, and I was like, ooh, they're going to do the thing. But I'm not going to tell you what the thing is. But that's directly from the books, and I know what's coming on that storyline, so I'm kind of excited. The other thing we haven't talked about real quick, which is Sam's story, the shapeshifter and his family, and they left him as a baby, and apparently his little brother's trying to kill him.
Yeah,
what's up
totally.
With that?
Yeah. And I was like, he totally left him there and then flies away. I was like, what's with that?
Yeah, he walks him in front of a truck.
Yeah, he deliberately did that. I mean, my first thought when I saw him doing it is he doesn't see the truck coming, and then I realized, no, he led him into that.
Right. And then I was like, because after he flies away, I was like, he did that on purpose.
Yeah.
You know? I was like, you lose points as cool little brother. Because at first I was like, oh, they're going to be kind of... I thought maybe they could be friends.
He seemed like the most stable one of the family, which granted isn't saying a great deal, but still.
Right.
Especially when it starts with him with a gun to his head or whatever.
Yeah, but I mean, he did seem like he had the least amount of problems. But dude, who tries to kill their brother when they first find out they have one? It's not even like there's any baggage yet. They don't even know each other. He's just like, you know what? I decided I don't want a brother after all, so let me just kill you.
Good He's like, Lord. Why waste time on sibling rivalry? I'm just going to kill you now.
That was crazy. All right, so let's move on to... Actually, I'm going to move on to The Gates. Since we actually talked about a good vampire show, we're going to talk about the premiere of a very bad vampire show.
Compare and contrast.
Right. The Gates premiered this Sunday, same time as... Well, it actually came on a little bit earlier.
Wait,
than
why is it... I'm sorry, I have not seen this, so I'm just going to listen... But can you explain, why is it called The Gates?
Because they live behind a gated community. It's like a special gated community where the iron fence is impenetrable and blah, blah, blah. I'm not quite sure. Well,
yeah, they made a big deal about the fence itself being designed in a certain place by a certain person. So you get the idea that there is something supernatural about the entryway itself.
Right.
But, yeah, the community itself, it's like, you know, a very high-end Drachtome community. It's all behind gates with a security team, and absolutely nothing about the show makes any sense whatsoever. Right. Starting with the security team.
Is this the modern world or the past?
No, it's the modern world.
It takes place now.
What makes no sense is this gated community has their own private police department, which is like, why would the regular police allow them to have their own
police?
Well,
no, you can have your own private security. That part didn't bother me so much.
But they seem more like police, though.
If you're going to, well, they have some ties in. Certainly the guy who was brought in to be the chief was a cop.
Right.
But what just killed me is here you've got a community that's filled with supernatural beings who want to protect their own. So who do they choose as their security team? Completely outside, non-supernatural people who have no idea what's going on. And not only that, but the new security chief is like one of these hair trigger, will investigate anything, tenacious like a ferret on your finger type people. And why would you want somebody who's going to come in and just cause problems for you? I have absolutely no idea.
Well, yeah, it would make more sense if you have security. They know who you are. You pay them off to keep people out.
Mm-hmm.
It makes no sense.
Or they'd have one of their own.
Right. It makes no sense to bring in outsiders and then be like, secure us from ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, and it was so god-awful. It was just like, the first scene is this woman who's a vampire, and it shows that some guy crashes into her driveway. She's like, oh, let me bandage up your cut. And then she's eyeing the blood on the cut, and she's like, you could tell all of a sudden she's hungry. She's like, oh, I like to have sex in the kitchen where I can drain you in a clean fashion. And I was just like, that was the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. Everyone saw that guy drive into her driveway. She had her neighbors go, oh, hi, how you doing?
And you know there's security with cameras everywhere.
Right, it was insane. And then she's totally incompetent about it. And then actually the point where I was just like, I'm done, was she's putting lotion on her legs. And
that was weird.
And then, it's to let you know why she can walk around in the daytime, because she's got this super protective lotion, mystical whatever, and because it's like she misses a spot. Yeah, she misses a spot on her leg, and the sunlight hits her leg and blisters her, and then she puts some more lotion on there.
You figure this has got to be SPF 5000.
Right, and I was just like, you know what? This is stupid, and I can't watch this. This is just awful. So this gets an F in my book.
That high?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was
you're an optimist. You really
yeah,
are.
It's I never need to see that show again. And
oh my god.
And I know why.
And it was funny as I missed. I thought it was starting this Sunday, so I'm actually glad I did miss it.
Oh yeah,
you missed nothing. You really didn't.
Libby and I always talk when we talk about a television show. We always a show being bad. What do I say, Olivia?
You say, is it as bad as True Calling? And my answer is yes, it is.
Whoa!
I can't compare that since I never saw True Calling.
Yes, it's as bad as True Calling, if not worse. Yeah, it was just bad. Okay, let's move on. I didn't want to spend a lot of time on the gates. I just wanted to say, it's a waste of your time, don't bother. The end. And apparently I also missed Leverage this week. My DVR betrayed me. I have a Leverage channel, and it did not record Leverage, and I did not know that it was even on until somebody's like, are we going to discuss Leverage? And I'm like, what? So, Allison, give us a quick synopsis or thoughts about the new seasons without giving too much explicit spoilers, just because don't want to spoil myself too much. Well, actually, Leverage is hard to spoil, but go ahead.
I'm enjoying it so far. Apparently they are going to be showing, or at least as far as my DVR shows, two shows per night, Sunday night. They opened up with the first episode where they explain how they managed to get Nate out of trouble, because we know at the end of the last season
he was going to jail.
He was also shot, and they did not address that. Suddenly, he's miraculously okay.
They don't address his gut wound?
Yeah, suddenly he got better. But they don't go into that. But they do have the show where they do go into how they get him out of trouble, and all of that was well done. It was a lot of fun. Their typical lot of comedy that they have and a clever way out of the situation. And I really enjoyed how it went. The second episode, I don't think was quite as well done, but it was still fun. It was one of these things where they were taking down a corrupt head of a like a Microsofty type corporation, which did security for terrorists, because don't they always? And well, you know how they do. And they did a lot of stuff involving psychological manipulation of him, because he had a hang up on how he'd been treated in high school, aka poorly, and they were able to get him in the position they wanted to by doing this high school reunion and laying a trap for him. And I thought that it was just kind of a little over much, but it was still fun.
Well, the only thing I have to say about Leverage is I don't know if I could watch two episodes a night. I like the show because it's fun, but it's not the kind of show I would probably watch double. You know, it's one of those once a week, it's a good fun release kind of deal. I think two is a little much.
A little over, but yeah. I think, you know, it's cute. It's let's face it, an American Hustle.
It's my thing. It's a bad copy American Hustle. Well, Hustle is fantastic.
Hustle, when it's on its game, I understand the last series wasn't quite all that.
Well, they got rid of the main guy.
Which is really stupid.
The main guy in Hustle.
Adrian.
He is a fantastic actor, and he held the team together. It's like them losing the main guy from Leverage. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So in the last season, they tried to replace him, and all the secondary guys were like, "Oh, we can run the team on our own." And I was like, "No, you really can't." And I watched a couple of episodes with them without the I can't remember his name.
Adrian Lester.
Yeah, and they tried to run a couple episodes without him, and it was just awful. So. But then when I saw Leverage, I was like, oh, it's an American version of Hustle. Mm-hmm. It's just not as good.
It doesn't have the edginess.
And it doesn't take itself as seriously. Like, Hustle was fun, but you really felt like they were really trying to pull these heists off, and they didn't do anything. Like, I feel sometimes Leverage does ridiculous things to get their marks, which I find sometimes
unbelievable. Well, they also never fail, and Hustle, they failed.
Right.
You know, they allowed them to have things screw up. They also were considerably less sanctimonious than in Leverage.
Yeah, on Hustle, they were...
You don't have a Nate-type character who's always angsting over
And we
past.
Have to do the right thing. Yeah, on Hustle, they were like, yeah, we're trying to get some money. But they had rules. They did have rules, which I like, the rules.
Yeah. Well, their basic rule was that they didn't go after innocent people. They were grifters who went after other grifters and thieves.
Well, thieves and people who were... Because they said, you can't hustle an honest man. Is that Leverage that says that?
You can't cheat an honest man is
no, but it was one of the mottos, and I can't remember from which show now, but I think it was Hustle. It was their whole thing in picking the mark, because somebody was like, well, how do you know you're picking a mark of an innocent? And he was like, well, you can't cheat an honest man, so if you're honest, you're not gonna go for whatever the scam is. If you're an honest person, you're not going to go for the easy money, which is how they get your money, you know? Mm. So that was their thing.
Well, they try to research who they go after.
Right.
And the one episode I remember where they actually did nail an honest guy.
Yeah, they got they like a nun or something? That was hilarious.
It was an Indian guy and he owned a factory, and now 200 people were going to be out of work because of what they did, they had to go back and fix that.
Yeah, they ended up giving him the money back. That was great.
That's probably the most sanctimonious episode that they've had, but mostly they're edgier than.
But the thing is the reason why they did it is because they believed that gave them bad luck. Thing was, we stole money from innocents. That's going to give us bad luck until we fix it. Mm-hmm. And so, like, for the next few scams they tried, they all failed.
Yeah.
So they were like, oh, we got to get this money back. And as soon as they gave the money back, then they're like, okay, we got our mojo back, so it's fine. All right, let's move on. let's move on to Lie to Me. This week was... the woman... Okay, this week's episode was basically... It was like a court drama.
Yeah.
Which,
yes.
Lie to Me, I don't... doesn't really do well. The best thing about that episode, though, was when they're swearing him in. It's like, tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but. And he's like, yeah, no, I can't do that. That's impossible. Like, that whole little bit was pretty funny. But it just felt like...
It was funny, but it was out of character for me. He just, the whole episode long, he didn't seem to be acting like Lightman. He was like Lightman on drugs.
Yeah, he was doing stuff that was a little weird, and... Then he was juggling three women, which was also weird.
Also weird. I don't know. I have to say flat out, I did not like the episode at all.
Really?
It was actually hard to sit all the way through because I was finding myself getting bored. I was getting annoyed.
Well, whenever they do a courtroom drama, especially if the show is not about a courtroom drama, it's always boring because you got to sit around and listen to lawyers talk and it's just, there's no action.
Well, and also they're doing things which you know are just ridiculous because they have lawyers acting as if they've never researched anything before they walked into that courtroom. Everything is a surprise. And in a real courtroom, nothing's a surprise. They've researched everything to death and they're in control of absolutely everything that happens.
Right.
So it's watching this thing, it was really like, it was like a courtroom drama from like 1965. It was so predictable and nothing really interesting happened. It was nothing that you couldn't see coming a mile away.
Right.
So
Ronnie, you had a comment?
Oh, and I was going to say, actually, this is only my second Lie to Me. So actually, I enjoyed it because I enjoyed him acting out in the courtroom, like you said, because it's not what would happen in a typical courtroom. But between him and the judge, I mean, I found that funny. And I guess not knowing his character enough, I didn't realize it was sort of out of character.
It was very out of character.
Well, I mean, he's outrageous. That's not out of character. Right. But
in a different way.
Well, I think the main problem was he wasn't in his usual environment. And he was... You couldn't tell whose side he was on because you didn't know if he was...
switched sides.
Right. Well, because he at first you're thinking, okay, he's trying to screw his ex-wife. And then you're thinking, no, he's trying to protect his ex-wife, which is actually what he was trying to do. But he did it in a really backwards way, which is Lightman, because he does do that. I thought Lightman was all right. I thought the plot was the part that was a problem. I didn't think he was particularly... super out of character. I just thought that the actual environment they had him in did not suit what he does. Because, I mean, he got to read a couple of people, but he didn't get to do it in a way that we're used to him talking. And because he's in a courtroom, he can't really talk that much, and he kept being in contempt. So he really couldn't say what he wanted to say, and so that was a little weird. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad that you liked it. Go back and watch more because the show's fantastic.
There are other shows that are definitely worth catching up on. If you like this one, believe me, you'll like the others.
And next week there's going to be an actor from Dollhouse. So actually, I'm going to watch it next week. I'm excited. The actor who plays Victor.
From the previews too, I was laughing because it looks like
he is Victor.
He is Victor. He's a character who's completely messed up. Who's had his memories. Toyed with in some way.
And he used to be a soldier.
He's a soldier. I was just laughing. It's, oh my God. When I was watching the thing and people were saying something like, well, we don't know what's wrong with him. And I'm thinking, well, he's a doll.
Yeah, when I was watching that too, I was like, he's Victor? Like,
there we go.
But yeah, I'm excited about next week too. All right, so The Good Guys was another new episode.
Yep.
Do you watch that, Robbie?
Yes, I do. Another hilarious episode. I loved it just because, you know, the bad guy ends up being not what you think. And he's just trying to, you know, get vengeance for his daughter. And he thinks he's neutralizing these different chemicals at these different meth labs. And he ends up blowing everything up.
I have to say, the scene in the interrogation room just killed me. That was hilarious. When he just falls apart completely. You know, here's this hardened criminal. And it's like,
well, the thing is, he's not a hardened criminal, which makes it funny.
But they made him look like he was some kind of crazed psycho bomber. That's what you're led to believe. And then you see this scene where he just falls apart. It was very funny.
I also I think the Chinese interpreter guy was hilarious. Awesome.
That was amazing. Yes, he did such a great job. Like, he's talking to the guy who's getting beat up. Please help me.
He's like, as soon as I finish this interpreting gig, he's going to kill me, and I interpret what he says right here, and you need to help me, and I interpret this other thing.
Yes. And the guy's going to blow your brains out. Help me.
And he's like, I'm tied to a chair. He's like, how am I supposed to help you? It was great. It was just like,
it was very funny.
All the stuff in there was really funny, and I like the fact that Whitford also got to have this moment where he totally hits on this woman, and his partner.
That seems to be standard every episode.
Every episode he hits on a woman, but he does it well, and it's so cheesy the way he does it, but it totally works. And his partner's like, "Dude, how do you do this?" And he's like, I got the mojo. And he, like, you know, touches his mustache. I'm like, yeah, it's not the stash, dude. But it's really, really funny. And anyone who's not watching it should totally check it out.
Yeah, it is a lot of fun. It's nothing you can take seriously. It's, you know, complete... It's just candy for an hour. But it's really, really cute. And I love Bradley Whitford in it is really surprising me. He could not be more different than in other things I've seen him in, particularly if you remember The West Wing. I mean, this is the character he is in this is a 180 degree difference.
Well,
he's playing it perfectly.
Well, it's not completely like you see the idiotness of Josh on occasion.
Yeah, but it's a different kind of.
Yeah, it is. It's way outrageous.
It's like this smug intellectual.
Josh was smug.
You know. And you have a completely different type of expressing this, but when he's in this character, and I can't believe that I can't remember the character's name now. We're talking about it, but
Dan Stark.
Thank you.
Yes, his name.
Dan Stark.
Yes, he's very happy about his name, and he thinks that he's a superhero.
He's just wonderful, and he's fallen down drunk half the time, and completely sleazy.
Oh, he's absolutely sleazy.
I mean, he's. You know, and overweight and huffing to run after things.
Oh, the best scene was the T.J. Hooker scene where he's running after the car. Yeah, he's running after the car and he dives and you think he's going to dive onto the hood and he totally misses it and lands on the cement. That was the best ever.
It was beautiful. It was beautifully shot too because, I mean, it was right up until the last second and then boom, on the ground. Great.
Yeah, all right, so let's move on to In Plain Sight.
I have not seen, I'm sorry.
It still has Mary McCormick in it this week, yes. And it was called Widsex Stepmother. And the only thing I have to say about it is it has the annoying... let me actually back up and say I have a general problem with the last few episodes, which is they've kept the main characters apart for several episodes, and I don't understand why.
That's a good point, yes.
I think for the last, like, three or four episodes, Marshall and Mary have not been together. They've been doing separate things, which I hate. And also, it feels like they're trying to make the show super emotional now, which I think is a bad turn, because the show can be emotional, but it's also funny. And they've lost some of the humor in trying to pull the heartstrings. And so this week's episode was like, oh, this teenager who's going to get in Widsec, her parents don't love each other, and Mary has to step in and be the parent, which you know is a train wreck because Mary sucks at that.
Right.
But it's really just...
You know what, Libby, I have to agree with you. It's like they're moving away from the best part of the show, and that's with Marshall and Mary together.
Right.
And I thought the whole subplot with Marshall and this yearly reunion, which seems ridiculous between these two brothers, that part of it didn't make any sense to me at all.
Right.
That, you know, that they would, you know, put that expense to have this family come together when they're supposed to be in witness protection.
And they're all in witness protection separately. So that always, because at first I was confused. I was like, well, is one person in witness protection and they're bringing his family together? It's like, no, they're all in witness protection and they're bringing the family together for a family reunion. And I was just like, why did they all go into protection separately? They're a family. That makes no sense. So,
right.
And then the brother, like, I can understand sibling rivalry, but a brother really trying to put a hit on his other brother, like, I didn't buy it. And it was one of the weaker episodes. I mean, I understood what they were trying to do. They're trying to do the whole emotional thing with, you're supposed to connect with the teenage girl and how Mary is, like, now her stepmom because her parents are not parenting her. And the girl is doing the whole cry for help deal. Blah, 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 blah. It was like, it really felt like they were hitting stereotypical marks. And
yes,
it didn't feel like In Plain Sight. So this was not their strongest episode.
I definitely agree.
And get back on track. That's...
Please. I need my Mary and Marshall, you know? I really do.
Well, next week looks like Mary and Marshall, but then they add the Steven Weber guy in the mix. So it's the finale.
I think it's a finale. So
right.
It's like... Before, I mean, we finally see them together for one episode, and it's over.
Right. But, and they're not even just together, because now you got Steven Weber who's trying to hit on Mary. So, yeah. I want Mary and Marshall doing their thing, because that's what they do.
Right.
They're partners, and we haven't seen them be partners in so long. Anyway, all right. I don't like to be on the negative, but there you go.
Hey, with the episode, you can't help it, you know?
All right, let's move on to Burn Notice. Am I alone in my Burn Notice watch?
No, I watched it as well.
All right, thank
And I enjoyed this episode because they...
I'm on disc one of season one.
Yes, you've only, but you've only watched, what, the first episode?
No, no, I watched like four. I like it, but I've only, I mean, I was, you know, making a joke, but I've seen like four episodes. It's good. I don't really like this girl, though, but you said she'll grow on me.
The girl you're referring to would be Fiona.
Correct. I was actually having dinner with my friends Andrew and Lisa, who love Leverage, Allison, and also like Burn Notice, and they did the same thing. They're like, her name is Fee. I was like, all right, whatever. Like, but I forgot. But yeah, she's okay. I love Bruce Campbell, though. That guy's awesome.
Yes, always. He's always awesome. Fee does grow on you, especially when she starts building explosives. I can't help but like the fact that she can make C4 from scratch. I think that's pretty awesome.
See, I always think she's, at least on this first season, she seems like the annoying person in the group that you don't, that wants to keep hanging out with you and you don't want, they serve no purpose. Because she's always like, what can I do? What can I do? And he's always like, yeah, it's all right. We got it covered. And then like,
well, that's because her first instinct, and especially in first season, is to blow stuff up. And Michael is very much like, yes, we're not going to blow stuff up yet. He's like, let's go through some other options first, and then if we need explosives, we know to come to you. But later on, they fold her into the group a lot better. She learns that Michael's first instinct is not to blow stuff up, so her suggestions are not always as violent. Like this week, what was actually great was Michael was like, I need a really big distraction. And she's like, seriously? You're going to let me blow something up? And he's like, yes. And she's like, woohoo! She's like, I need. And she had a guy in the trunk, and she's like, I need you to move over. You're laying on my C4. And the guy, the look on the dude's face who's in the trunk is hilarious. So,
I think over time she's become a real grounding force for Michael in different ways. But it's funny because she's gotten frustrated because she wants them to come together, and he's always off doing his spy stuff. And so it was interesting in this episode, it started off with, you know, her, I forgot the new guy's name.
Jesse.
Jesse going to the Bahamas, and she's rubbing it into Michael as best as she can, you know, being in the Bahamas, you know?
Right, and it's really, I like her being paired up with Jesse because it's kind of interesting because they have similar temperaments. Yes. But I also like the fact that this week's episode escalated from, hey, Michael, I just wanted to introduce you to this guy, to a hostage situation. Like, that was so, that was great because Michael's like, so how long is this going to take? And he's like, oh, it'll only be, you know, I promise you, it'll only be a day, and we're just going to go meet this guy and try to help him with his problems. No worries. They get there, find out the guy's gone to this dude's office to confront him. They get to the office. There's a hostage situation, and they're trying to defuse it, and then the police show up. So now they're stuck because it's like Bruce Campbell, who plays Sam, is like, I'm not leaving this guy. He's one of my best friends. And Michael's like, well, I guess I'm not leaving you. So I guess we're all hostage takers. And to watch them try to figure out how to get out of the situation without going to jail for armed whatever. So that was actually pretty good. And the fact that they had two guys on the outside to help them assess the situation and to help them to cause distractions and help them go get information was very useful. Even though, yes, of course, the police shut down their phones. He's like, you know, I like the little voiceover. He's like, yes, if the standard police procedure is to shut down your phone, so therefore, if you use a common wall and cut out the blah, 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 then you can set up your own independent phone line by doing this. And I was like, that looks brilliant. All right. The only thing that was weird was Michael's voiceover for Jesse. Like, it felt like Michael should have been doing what Jesse was doing. Mainly because Michael's voiceover is always for stuff that he is currently doing at the moment. So having his voiceover for Jesse was strange because he wasn't even there. He didn't even know what Jesse did. So how is he doing a voiceover?
I didn't think about that.
Yeah, that was a little weird.
But I really enjoyed it too, because like you were saying, it went off of the regular formula of them, you know, having a client, you know, doing a job, where this time they got caught up in it before they could even, you know who the client was. And so I like that they, you know, sort of all of a sudden are in the middle of a hostage situation, you know, and he didn't have time to think or plan. They just had to, you know, sort of react and become proactive in the middle of what was going on.
Right. And I liked, they did have to come up with plans, but all the plans they came up with were like, the only thing that was unbelievable, SWAT showed up in 5 minutes. I was like, are you kidding me? So they basically had to really think on their feet and figure out what the heck they were going to do, figure out how to, they had to interrogate prisoners, break into a safe, and figure out how to get out without going to jail. Like, they had to do all that within a very short period of time. And that really shows how Michael thinks on his feet, because Sam would have been in jail. Sam was like, I guess I'm going to jail. and it takes, and that's the thing that really shows that it takes Michael to, he is the brains of the organization. Without him, they are just like soldiers without orders, you know?
Right. You know, and that reminds me of something sort of different, but what's one thing that's interesting that I love about Burn Notice is like how that they put on the screen, like sort of the, you know, who the person is and what they are, and they're really snarky with their comments that show up, you know, on screen.
Right. Because usually it's like such and such, the client. And recently in the newer seasons, they rarely actually put the client up.
They have all these other ones, but it's so cool because it's very snarky what they put up about the different people. But the one thing I'm finding is the good guys are doing something similar. I don't like it in the good guys because I think Burn Notice does it much better.
You mean, I don't remember them doing title cards on the good guys.
Yeah, they do. Oh, yeah. And drives me crazy is the bullet noise every time they need to do that.
Oh, yeah, the bullet noise is kind of irritating.
After a while, yeah.
Right. It's like, leave it to Burn Notice. They have that down. Let them, you know, let that be for that series. And good guys, you just stick with your, you know, backwards thing, you know?
Yeah, backwards time is pretty cool.
Right.
3 hours earlier.
All right. Do you have any other comments about Burn Notice?
Nope, they'll do it.
Okay, let's move on to Doctor Who. And this week's episode is Vincent and the Doctor. Go.
Well, actually, one of the things that I like best about this particular show, there were two things that impressed me. One was the performances of the actor who was playing Vincent, and also I loved seeing Bill Nighy doing his bit as the curator. He was wonderful. The other thing that I liked was just the way it was shot. They really, really captured a lot of scenes in such a way that they kind of, without duplicating it exactly, they recreated the feeling of Vincent's paintings, the environments that they did, things like the shots of his bedroom and the shots of the wheat field with the crows, CGI crows, but still. And they just did a really nice job of giving you this impression of this is how he created these paintings because he was in this environment. And really, that was nice. I liked the way it looked.
I totally agree. I really like that too.
So
you had more in-depth discussion about the paintings, Peter.
Well, I thought that, no, I would, springing off of what Allison said, I have to say, you know, that I know of, I think Doctor Who is basically made for all audiences in BBC or in England, right? I mean, it's kind of an ages 8 to 80 show.
It's a family show.
Right.
As opposed to like a, I don't know, whatever. But yeah, well, Torchwood, I think, skews a little older.
Oh, right. Yes.
Yes.
So, you know, you're doing a show about Vincent Van Gogh, and as we've seen on Doctor Who, they've dealt with famous people before. There's a, was it Agatha Christie?
Agatha Christie was not very good.
But, you know, but like this one, I thought they did a pretty good job of like, you know, when there's a scene where they're looking up at the sky, and then you're kind of seeing how he sees things, or even rudimentary when they're at the museum with Bill, what is it, Nye? How do you say
Nighy.
That? Nighy, and he's talking about the brush strokes, and that's one of my pet peeves usually is whenever I'm, and it's very college kid dorm to do, but like, you know, for freshman or sophomore year of college, you always have some guy who's got like, or guy or girl who has like a print of Vincent Van Gogh or, you know, any other major artwork, and I'm always kind of like, yeah, that is what the painting looks like, but like in real life, not only is it that the detail is different, but you physically see like the clumps of paint, especially on a Vincent Van Gogh. So I thought
Van Gogh was very much like that. Yes.
Yeah, and so it's almost like his brush strokes can really exemplify his emotion that he's like feeling. So I thought they did for a show that's for everybody, that's not going to get too heady and philosophical. I thought they did a really good job of really demonstrating like Vincent Van Gogh's point of view. I thought they really knocked it out of the park for that.
Definitely. I love this episode myself. And one of the things that's funny, I actually got choked up when the creature, you know, died, because just the way that they did it, you know, and it wasn't meant to be. They were just trying to, you know, get it captured and figure out what was going on. And in that, it happened. But I was amazed at how choked up I got. And a lot of times, you know, once, you know, the monster or whatever is killed, that the episode ends. So I really, what I also liked about this episode is how that they really use a time machine to show him what he didn't understand about his artwork. That choked me up too. So this was just a fantastic episode that they took it and, you know, brought him forward in time to see what his artwork really meant, where he was painting over it and putting his, you know, coffee and everything else on the painting.
Mm-hmm. To really, well, yeah, no, and I thought, no, see. I agree. I was really, I was so surprised how emotionally moved I was in that whole episode. Because when I saw the trailer, I was just like, oh man, it's another goofy, it's a famous person in the Doctor Who universe. And
yes, chasing monsters.
I thought it was really, I thought, you know, Libby and I discussed the positives and mostly negatives for Libby on Amelia Pond. But actually, I thought she was used well. Like, I don't really have any big complaints.
I think it was one of Amy's better episodes. She grated on me less. I'm not a huge Amy fan, I gotta say, but she was better in this. I think because there was this genuine feeling that I got from her that she'd made an emotional connection to Vincent, and finding out, as she does at the end, that her belief that she's made a real impact in his life, that she's changed history somehow, and discovering that that is not the case, that things go deeper than just, you know, becoming friends with somebody, that, you know, bad things still happen. This was more emotionally true for me.
Yeah, I thought her enthusiasm for hanging out with Vincent was great, but mm-hmm. of course you're right. You know, you pretty much, the writing is on the wall with whether, even if he sees that he, you know, is to become one of the biggest painters of all time.
Right.
Just of who he was, it's still going to end up kind of a sad ending.
Right.
And I like the fact that even though she, you know, they showed the futility of the fact that everything that they did, everything that they tried to try to make an impact on his life, he's still a manic depressive, mm-hmm. and it doesn't matter because he has no medication. He has nobody to help treat him. He's still going to commit suicide.
Yeah. Pre-antidepressant days, there's not a lot he's going to be able to do to overcome this.
Right.
So, yeah.
Also, oh, no, go ahead, Allison.
No, I think that she has kind of a childlike attitude that, you know, if you just make somebody happy, that that's going to change their whole outlook. If you show them something positive, that's going to change everything. And she comes face to face with the fact that, you know, mental disorders really go deeper than that. And you can't expect a happy ending all the time. So I rather like that.
I also want to say that I also thought that it's not really quite emotionally as big of a deal, but I thought they did a good use too of he's got that. So basically, Vincent Van Gogh draws the monster, and so the doctor's like, oh, I can use that device, you know. So he brings up that mirror, and of course he shows it, and it has no idea like what it is. And then mm-hmm. later he's outside, and the monster really is in the reflection, like, of the mirror. And I thought that was a really that was a good Doctor Who gadget. I was like, oh, that's a pretty cool, like it completely makes rational sense for how this thing works, but it's still somewhat special and magical.
Right. I did.
What was nice is how they did, like, bring it back to the first doctor, because when he looked at it, it was showing the different faces of the first couple of doctors. I thought that was a nice little, you know,
yeah,
sort
that
of
was nice
back
too.
To the first doctor.
I will say though that, you know, as where the monster was concerned, I think I would have been happier if it had been invisible straight through the episode, because that is really not one of their more successful monster designs. I mean, you know, it's a bear chicken, okay? You know, that's basically it. A giant bear chicken.
I've always had pretty, I mean, I just accept that about Doctor Who. My wife watched the premiere of Doctor Who for this season, and she never watches Doctor Who. Mm-hmm. And her first instinct when they showed, I forgot what the creature is that they're going against in that, the one in the closet. And she's
Patient
like,
Zero.
That looks terrible. And I was like, well, it's just kind of Doctor Who. Like that. I mean, they never really have great CG monsters. So I guess I just accept that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm a Doctor Who fan from way back. Tom Baker was my first Doctor. And so I'm used to the horrible rubber monster suit thing that they've always had going right back to the beginning. It impresses me when they do something a little bit better than that. It doesn't have to be a whole lot better than that, but just, you know, something that's going to be suitably scary. And I don't know, the bear chicken didn't do it for me.
I did like him running around the alleyways with that mirror device. I thought that was really good. And I think that Matt Smith has great comedic timing.
Oh, he does.
Yeah, he's very good.
Yeah, that was like the best thing about
it. Wait, do we know, is Matt Smith, has he been signed on for another season?
I believe he has. I don't know if anyone else has, but I think he has.
I'm pretty sure everyone likes him. I think everyone is unanimous in their appreciation of this doctor.
Yeah, I have issues with this series, but this particular season, but I really like him. And it's kind of funny because when I saw previews and things like that, I was really kind of dodgy about Matt Smith. I thought, oh, he's so young and I don't know if I like him. He's got a weird face. He's got no eyebrows. And, you know, but when I actually saw him in action, he captures the doctor for me. He has this weird eccentric attitude and he really does a great performance.
Yeah.
I would agree. I like Matt Smith a lot. I guess I would be okay if, even though I don't hate Amelia as much as Livia does, I go back and forth on her. I thought she was terrific in the pilot, in the premiere, especially the little girl version. I really liked
her. That's the thing. There's Amelia, the little girl, and then there's Amy, the adult.
Right,
and
so I guess, am I talking about the character or the actress? I guess that's where it's...
I'm talking about the actress, but I think Amelia is great. The little girl is
terrific.
She's packing up her suitcase and everything. Yeah. Like, I felt so bad for her. Like,
she's fantastic.
I would be okay with, if this season ends with... if the season ends with they resolve their time crack thing and then he drops Amelia off, she gets married, and then the new season starts and Matt Smith is still the doctor and he gets a new companion, that's fine. I would be fine with that.
I am hoping and praying for that.
But I don't want to lose Matt Smith. Like, I really think, I don't want another doctor. I'm like,
No. I think he's a fine doctor. I think he just has companion issues right now. I tell you,
I will miss, I am going to miss Rory.
I like Rory.
I don't like Rory. But thumbs down on Rory. He had that great speech when he told the doctor, you know, you make people want to impress you. Yes, that was a good speech. But in general, like when he disappeared from existence, I was so happy. I was like, yeah.
You are a mean person.
I know a lot of people like Rory. I think he's kind of bland. I just don't think very interesting.
Only thing I will have to say about this new companion is he didn't pick her. It wasn't like he went out and found the most brilliant companion and said, you are going to be my companion on these adventures. It was more like he crashed onto her house, accidentally ruined her life, and then was like, I guess I got to take you with me now.
Right.
You know, so...
By the way, I wanted to ask, because I never had a chance to ask this before, but I was looking at little bits just to remind myself of the first episode. And I'm looking at these little snippets, and I just want to ask, am I the only person who has noticed that when you go inside Amy's house, let's go to the outside first. She has a two-story house.
Right.
But if you go inside, she's got two flights of stairs.
Oh, that's true.
Oh. Which is two flights of stairs?
She has two flights of stairs. You go up one flight to get to her bedroom.
And you see another flight.
And there's another flight that leads up who the hell knows where. And there is clearly not a third floor on this house.
That reminds me of the lodger. Are you thinking that?
It's ahead for a lot of the people.
Interesting. No, I don't.
But I think for me, like with, you know, sort of the character Amy, I give her more room because of, you know, like how she did meet the doctor. Like, say, a different companion like Martha, who was a fully realized woman. You know, she was, you know, in med school when they met. You know, where Amy, her whole life got ruined by it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the fact that she is kind of annoying and she is very impulsive, I can sort of let that go because, you know, of the relationship and the special way that the doctor came into her life. So even though she's annoying, it, like, it makes perfect sense given the character and her whole story.
Not if I have to watch her.
Well, the thing is, I agree with you that there are things about her character that are just very strange and they're not supposed to add up. And the fact that, you know, she's been affected at an early stage by the doctor, so she's developed this weird obsession on him, and, you know, is one of those things. It's just that, you know, I agree with Livia. The performance that we're getting from the actress just isn't up there.
No, she's not strong enough. I mean, no. I think another actress could have pulled this off. She just can't.
Mm-hmm.
See, I think she's, I guess I think she does certain things okay, and then other things I would agree Like, I didn't think she had any chemistry with Rory. I thought the two actors, I thought they felt like siblings or something. But there's other moments where I think, again, especially in the pilot, like when she's dealing with, is it her aunt who's like, oh, the raggedy doctor. Is that her aunt?
Yeah, I think so.
All that stuff when she's like, wait, you're a nurse today?
I don't think that was supposed to be her aunt, just or a maybe neighbor.
Maybe it's a neighbor. I don't know.
Neighbor.
And that's one of the curious things. She's don't like, meet the aunt.
Wait, you know, I thought you were a nurse. You know, now you're a cop and... the actress is something, you know, yep, so I am a cop today. Like, actually, that delivery was very funny. Like,
I think she was fine. She was fine in the premiere. I didn't really have a problem with her in the premiere. It's just every episode since then. And I think that, like, in the episode with the angels, I mean, just bringing in River Song made Amy look even worse.
Well, because, actually, I really like that. Those two-parters.
I like the two-parters, too. I'm not arguing that. I love the two-parters. Amy was a weakness. She was dragging the episode down.
But she's got one of the best scenes. The scene where... I mean, well, it's not really... I wouldn't say it's really contingent upon the actress, but the scene where it's coming through the... That's a big scene.
That's because the angel is creepy and scary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with her. It could have been a block of cheese in that room. And it still would have been scary. But,
I will say, the other unfortunate thing... You know, Ronnie, you were mentioning the circumstances of Amelia and the other companions, yes, like Martha. I will say that another thing is that from what Livia says, the woman who plays Donna was pretty famous, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
And she's also a redhead. Like, so visually, they're both redheads. One's older, one's younger. And that actress is really good.
Oh,
like,
she's
it's also the
Catherine Tate, yes.
She's following. She's another redhead companion. That's
Well, she's a comedian and a character actress. So she has. One thing she has is range.
Yeah, Catherine Tate is fantastic, and there's no way that Kate Gillian.
Or Karen.
Karen. Oh, I called Gillian. Her Kate. Karen. Yeah, Karen. Say it
I think
again.
It's Gillian.
Gillian. They're not going to compare. Catherine Tate is one. She's like 10, 15 years older. She's got more experience, and she's just better.
Yeah, I just get the impression that she was cast mostly because she looks great in a micro miniskirt.
Yes.
Well, and I think it's because they also, with Matt Smith, I think they were deliberately casting a doctor and companion that were younger. Mm-hmm. I think that was a...
Yeah.
Because Matt Smith's also young, too.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
But he doesn't... Yes. I have to say, he doesn't feel young.
No, he doesn't. That always impresses me because I get this feeling that he really is ancient.
Right.
You know, that he's lived a lot of years and become very eccentric and you know, I'm staring at this guy who's in his 20s, and yet he's able to give that in his performance.
Right.
Which is wonderful.
Yeah. Right.
I agree.
I don't think they needed to cast a young girl. Like, I think
actually he's the most chemistry that he has had this year was with Nazreen. Cold Blood, and what was
the Beast
the two-parter, The Beast Below, Cold Blood. Yes,
it was the big drill.
Hold up, Beast Below is not the drill. The Beast Below is the one with the whale.
Oh, not that. That's the whale. Okay, what's the one with the drill? What is that?
That was Cold Blood and the Hungry Earth.
Hungry Earth, right? Okay,
yeah,
and Nazreen was wonderful, and I loved seeing the two of them together.
Yeah, because I was like, he's just taking anybody into his TARDIS now. I was like, all right,
take a number, stand in line.
Okay,
but she was great. She had just the right kind of combination of character qualities. She was interested in things without being stupid about them.
Right.
She was,
and she's a scientist, and she was smart.
Yeah, and she had this adventurous spirit, which I really liked.
Right. Yeah.
So I thought they were great. I thought that she had a whole lot more chemistry with the doctor than Amy has ever proved.
I would agree. I think I even said that to Libby after I watched it. I was like, that lady should be the companion.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, she was good. I agree.
Yeah.
So, of course, she gets stranded under the earth
for a thousand years.
Yeah, they're right.
All right. Well, I think that's the end of this particular Doctor Who discussion. We have given the positives and the negatives. Do you guys have any last comments about the podcast or any thoughts wrapping up?
I'm very curious to see how Doctor Who's going to end, but, I feel like I'm one of the people who I need to watch more television this summer. I was actually talking to a friend of mine who she thinks their summer is her favorite TV season. She's got so many shows that she watches.
I do too. I mean, I can't wait because I have Eureka's coming up, Psych is coming up, White Collar is coming
Warehouse 13 is going to be debuting, I believe, next week.
Wait, I heard that was bad.
You heard that from.
That, you know, it's a mixed kind of thing because it's very episodic, so there's nothing really, you know, that arc wise that's going to hold you. I like it, and the two leads are just boring and vanilla.
The two leads are awful.
But the what you watch it for really?
No, they don't. I watched a whole season. They did not grow on me at all.
They didn't grow on me either. I just I found them. I found
that actor I like.
Yes,
Saul Rubinek. He is a joy to watch.
He is good, but you have to sustain watching their version of Mulder and Scully, who are awful. You have to watch a full episode. Like, the scientist guy gets like 10, 15 minutes per episode.
No, he gets better than that. And also,
well, unless the episode's about him.
The girl, the young girl assistant, I like her too. She's terrific.
I like her too. She gets about 5 minutes.
I love CCH Pounder when they bring
her. She's good.
She's terrific.
She only gets, she's in 1 out of 5 episodes.
And I'm hoping they bring Roger Reese back as well.
But my thing is, the stars of the show that you spend 80% of your time with are boring.
That I have to give you.
They are so they are boring. And I the woman, they try to play her as being the skeptic, and I'm like, really, the woman's the skeptic? So she's like the skeptic, super straight laced, and I can't stand her. And then the guy, they try to make him comedy relief, and he's supposed to be funny, and he's not.
No, and he's grating. They try too hard with his character.
Yeah, he tries way too hard. And I gave it a full season. I watched 13 episodes, and then when I watched the finale, it ended. I was like, "All right, I never need to see the show again."
See, I still like it. I don't consider it necessarily must see TV, but I enjoy it, and I enjoy it for the things that I said, you know, which is basically the supporting cast is terrific. I kind of
they are supporting, but the thing is, the supporting cast don't get. It's not an ensemble show. They don't get a lot of time. The main characters are the main characters, and they get the primary billing and the primary time on the episode. Mm-hmm. And there are a couple episodes where they'll focus on the secondary characters. Like, there were two episodes, I think, last season that were all about the scientist guy.
Right.
And those episodes were actually pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
But I just decided I couldn't watch 13 episodes of Dreg to get to two episodes of that was pretty good.
See, I
and they don't use CTH Pounder anywhere near.
No, they should use her
talent
more often, she's wonderful. I love her.
Yes.
I wish they would bring her back more often. She's terrific. And I, you know, I do agree with you. I can't disagree that the two leads are absolutely numbingly boring. But the rest of the show, it's cute. You know, it's not a great show. It's not must see viewing, but it's a good show.
Ronnie has a comment to dispute us.
Yes, no, I was just going to say that I do enjoy them. It took me a while to grow into them because, like, I see where you both are coming from. But at some point in the season, they finally clicked for me. So, you know, they're not the best. And I'm with you, Allison, that it's not must-see TV. But I do enjoy it. You know, I'm going to watch it.
Yeah,
and, hey, in the new season, there's going to be one episode with the bionic woman, Lindsay Wagner, on it. So.
Well, you guys can talk Warehouse 13 while I sit silently by, because I make faces because I
stick your tongue.
There's so much summer television to watch.
There is. There's
that
a lot.
I'm not going to waste my time.
Being Human, the new
season. Oh, Being Human starts
when? That's going to be starting in August, I believe, and I can't wait for that to start
because the cliffhanger was great.
Yeah, I cannot wait for that one to get going. That's awesome. That is definitely on my
list. Just as a curiosity. Are you talking about the BBC airing of Being Human, or are we talking about the BBC America airing
of
Being Human?
Well, I'm talking... Well, the BBC, I don't know if it's actually started yet. It's going to be starting sooner than the American version. The BBC America starts in August.
Oh, okay, cool.
I believe the BBC one is going to be starting 2 or 3 weeks earlier than that.
They have learned.
Yes, they have learned. You don't have to wait a year to watch the program. All right,
that's pretty cool, because I love Being Human. But see, like, with shows like that, why the heck would I be watching Warehouse 13? That's all I'm saying.
Well, they're not necessarily on at the same time. That's the thing. I think Warehouse 13 is on like, Wednesdays or Thursdays. And right now, there's nothing on Wednesdays or Thursdays. So why not tune in?
Well, right now, I watch In Plain Sight. Well, In Plain Sight ends next week, so there's that.
Right.
But then we get White Collar and we get Psych, which I think are both really good, funny shows. And they have great leads.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not boring at all. And they have actually halfway good stories. Mm-hmm. So, and better production value. Because Warehouse 13 has very low production value.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things that Sci-Fi likes about it. It doesn't cost them a lot of money.
And you can tell it doesn't cost them a lot of money. It's like the whole thing is green screen.
But yeah, I mean, look, I'm not going to say that it's a great show, because it's not. But it is entertaining. If you just want to turn your brain off and watch something that's vaguely amusing, and exactly, enjoy it. It's amusing. It's entertaining enough.
Okay, like I said, you guys can discuss it, and I will sit idly by as you do. All right.
And think what horrible taste we have.
Well, if you guys have differing ideas out there or shows you want to recommend for the summer, please let us know. You can give us feedback at tvcampfire@gmail.com. And we'll talk to you next week.
Later. Right. Bye.
Bye.